People always say, oh, you have to be silly to be a hairdresser and stuff. But now understanding the nuance of what we do, how we do it, you know, the geometry with shapes, the mathematics of colour, you have to be pretty damn intelligent to be doing a craft. Yeah, they said, you know, lads like you don't do hairdressing. It was very frowned upon. Yeah. You know how it was back in the day? You had to come from a particular elk or be a particular certain way to be accepted in that industry. Sure. I don't know if you remember, I had dreads up until last year, and then I had like a, let's say, a midlife crisis. I went to a little fade, then I did the waves, trying to look like a little sweet boy.
Do you know what?
I'd be lying if I said, yeah. I think now I get an extra, you know, 15, 20 minutes in bed. I'd have to worry about doing my barnet. So
your Terrence Trent Derby days are behind
you. I love it. What a boy he was, eh? Millie Vanilli was more like it.
Hi there, I'm Anthony Laban, and you're watching the Noble Barber Podcast. We're here to cut through the crap of the industry and give the answers, or at least try and find the answers to the problems that all of us as business owners struggle with every day. Thanks very much for watching. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi there. Well, welcome to another episode of Noble Barber. I'm Anthony Laban, and I'm here tonight, or this afternoon, maybe tonight, with Dexter Dapper Johnson. We're going to be talking... Well, I guess education is going to be a huge part, but men's hair in general. Welcome, mate. Good to see you. Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure.
Time. And obviously, we're here at Barber Connect, and you've had a cracking afternoon on stage. So thank you very much for taking that extra time out to come and talk to us.
Pleasure. It's been a goal of mine to be on this for a while. So thank you.
Yeah. So let's start with your kind of entrance into the industry. How did you come about and where you are now?
Yeah, do you know what? In a nutshell, I came from a totally different background that wasn't hairdressing, that wasn't barbering. I've told the story time and time again. A lot of people laughed, and quintessentially they said, you know, lads like you don't do hairdressing. It was very frowned upon. Yeah. You know how it was back in the day? You had to come from a particular elk or be a particular certain way to be accepted in that industry. Sure. But I bit the bullet. I went into it. 10 different, God knows how many CVs I printed out. But I remember it was, I won't name the companies, but it was so many. And Tony and Guy was the only one that got back towards me. And they took a risk on me, which I am, and I say this on camera, I am forever indebted to them. And yeah, the rest, as they say, is history.
And this is all London. You're a Londoner, right?
Yeah, this is... Well, do you know what? There's a thin line. I would say South East London. Others would say Kent.
Oh, okay.
But it blurs the line between the two. Yeah. But yeah, the accent says I'm a Londoner.
And so you started as an apprentice with Tony and Guy?
Yeah, I started as an apprentice at a salon down in Kent, Bluewater Shopping Centre.
Yeah.
So that was a real baptism of fire.
But you say you were an easy student and you were keen, eager, and did everything you were asked?
Bit of both. I think initially I had a real, dare I say, lack of respect for the industry.
Right.
Because again, coming from a background that was like, you know, hairdressing's easy. You pick up a pair of scissors, you snip.
Just make your hair shorter, isn't it?
Yeah, it was like, and then, you know, people always say, oh, you have to be silly to be a hairdresser and stuff. But now understanding the nuance of what we do, how we do it, you know, the geometry of shapes, the mathematics of colour, you have to be pretty damn intelligent to be doing a craft. So initially, I'd turn up late to the salon. I didn't have that discipline. I'd be out here, there and everywhere, living my best life, nights out, you know.
Yep.
And of course, my pals are in different industries, so I was trying to live the lifestyle that they live instead of being dedicated to my craft and following my path. So it was a big change. But when I really knuckled down and I had some great, great, great mentors, and I'm sure we'll touch on them, but it changed the game for me dramatically. Yeah.
And so you qualified, how long ago? How long you've
been?
Oh,
so I qualified
back in... When did you get your
certificate? 2008.
Okay,
yeah, I'm showing my age now.
There you go. Well, I can see of you. You seem to be doing all right, mate. Don't worry.
But no, yeah, 2008, I qualified. Because I was older, and you know, back in the day, there wasn't much government funding. You had to be 16 to be able to do your 2-3 years. So I had to do it all within 18 months.
Wow.
Get my level 2, get my level 3, and then effectively my level 4, which is the... VADAing process that Tony and Guy do. So I like to say it's a higher end, it's an upper echelon of education that we deliver. So after 18 months, I went from being absolutely diddly squat to finishing up with a level 4 and then running a column through of clients in a very, very busy salon.
And so where did you move to? Where was your first salon as a qualified?
Went from Blue Water, so trained in Blue Water, and luckily I made enough of an impact. They didn't ship me out, they kept me on. Really learnt my craft, learnt how to work with clients, learnt how to work with guests, learnt how to talk, because believe it or not, I'm very shy.
Right, yeah, a lot of people, mate.
I've learnt to put on a facade, so to speak. But really honed my skills there. And then under the advice and tutelage of a variety of people, I made that jump, still within Tony and Guy, but I changed salons. And that's when I went to Covent Garden.
Oh, wow.
The bright lights of Central London.
That's the same ones, their real flagships.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, you've got Covent Garden, you've got Sloane Square, you've got areas sitting along North Alderley, Wigmore Street, you know the really creme de la creme areas. So going from them, you know, working with people that are from Kent, South East London, you know, and there was none of that working from home back there. There was absolutely none of that. It was all like, your people, going into Central London. And I'm meeting people that got business meetings on Fleet Street, you know, different calibre, you know. You know, the tonality you speak with, your level of interaction, everything has to change.
But that's the big difference. I mean, you know, we talked about George Smith a little while ago, and I chatted a lot with George about, you know, as barbers and hairdressers, you kind of cross over those kind of social divide.
Yeah.
You know, I was listening to Nicky Clark talking about Sarah Ferguson popping down to open up his shop for him because you know. Just doing him a little favour because you become friends with, you know, different classes, different people, and it just changes. Yeah. And it's one of the few industries that you are seen by your clients as a friend, 100%. Much more than maybe your mechanic or
100%.
You know, your house painter or whatever. You become much more intimate as a friend, and that's amazing.
It's mental. I've been invited to like weddings, gender reveals, baby showers, you know, engagement parties, the full shebang. Because you know that level of interaction we have, and that level of confidence that we get out of our clients and that we give to them.
Yeah.
It's a different level.
So Covent Garden went well for you. And it plunged you. It was a new baptism and you kind of saw the bright lights.
Yeah, it was really good and really good. And you know, I know I wouldn't be able to do these things without the level of education that I had with Tony and Guy, first and foremost. And of course, I know personality comes into the fold because you make it your own and so on and so forth. But initially, the people I had around me, I was working with Hall of Famers in Covent Garden, British Hairdresser of the Year, London Hairdresser of the Year, Afro Specialists. And then that allowed me to, and I use this word, elevate my own game to then get to their levels where I started finalising in competitions. I started winning awards. Luckily, I had a couple of friends that were footballers. I invited them in. You know, the clientele then begin to expand that little bit more. Word of mouth, actors, actresses, you know, models, that the whole thing came in. So it's a real experience.
But you're not quite so behind the chair now, really.
No.
When did that change? Because one of the big things that, as I said to you just off camera, Tony and Guy's education really interests me.
Yeah.
But when did you make that move away from being a column?
Yeah. So do you know what? With Tony and Guy, were the official sponsors of London Fashion Week with our haircare range, Label M. So that goes without saying. So we basically rule the roost when it comes to London Fashion Week here. And we've done a plethora of shows from E-Torts, Coma, Henry Holland, What We Wear, the list goes on. So for me, my editorial skills, my braiding skills, my dry skills, my dry cutting skills, my wet skills, the basics, whether it was pin curls, whether it's heated rollers, even into the new fashion element of stuff, that all came from Tony and Guy. But then I wanted to branch out a little bit, and I wanted to try a little bit of the session work. And that's where I was lucky, because over the period of time I've worked in this industry, you know, you meet friends, you make connections, and that's where it was lucky. I've had the mentors in that field, such as the Kosakis's, the Effie Davises, the Indira Showworkers, and then pushing outside to being able to work with the guys such as Guido Palau, that does it all. And then I've gone and worked in the Louis Vuittons, the Pradas, the Diors with him. We're off to Sardinia in a little while to do some couture show and ready-to-wear show. So it's really cool, and I know I'm blessed. I know I'm very lucky in that sense.
But, you know, you're doing a lot of, you know, certainly kind of the Insta world.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing the Insta world as far as it.
Yeah.
So just for the sake of balance, and we do like a bit of balance on the show here, you're doing a bit of graph behind the scenes as well on this. You didn't magically just turn up and do this. You've done all your, you've earned your stripes and you've worked hard.
Yeah.
But as a day, you still have a day job when you're not doing, you're not doing Dior, you're not doing catwalk, you're not flying to Sardinia.
All the rotten stuff.
There's an alarm that goes off on your bedside and you're up and out.
Yeah, so we're up. Like I said, I'm one of the international artistic directors for Tony and Guy, head of men's education, head of the internal Vardering program that we speak about. And I'm also co-academy manager with two-time London Hairdresser of the Year, Mr. Daniele De Angelis.
So amazing.
Running the academy is pretty cool. And I love...
And the academy's where?
Just New Oxford Street, just off the...
Incredible. Bit of London to be based
in. Yeah, lovely. Yeah. And it's nice because from when I walked in those doors as a young, bright-eyed boy, I now get to transition people and set them up for the future. You know, having that little spark, showing them how to hold scissors for the first time, that's always going to stick with them. Yeah. You know, things like that, how to blow dry, how to braid. Set them up, whatever background, whatever facet they want to do, whether it's cut, colour, whether it's both.
And do they still seem like there's a few little yous that arrive every year? And do you recognise the young you arriving in some of these?
I do. I do more so now because now I think there's a lot more young lads that are like me that come from a background like me, which is very, very interesting. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with making teas, coffee, sweeping, you know, things like that. And I have to pull them aside, have a little quiet word in their ear and say, you know, this isn't the be-all, end-all of it. You're subconsciously, you're taking in information.
You're absorbing
You're not even realising it. And there's nothing wrong with working and training your calf in different establishments, but when they get through that, you know, that three-month period and they really progress on, it's like, yeah, it was worth it.
Yeah.
It was worth it. Because I think, sorry, this generation, I think a lot of people want everything instantaneously, but don't be afraid to put the long slog in short term. And I do say 2 years, 3 years is short term to have a career for a life.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. You know, you've done, you know, 20 years quietly to become an overnight success.
Yeah. So, just blew up out of nowhere.
But, I mean, so the real reason, because obviously, you know, Tony and Guy were talking about hairdressers and barbers, and I'm a big advocate of having a foot in each camp. I think the days of we're barbers, you're hairdressers, I think those are blurring now, and I think I meet more hairdressers that are coming to these things and doing training.
Yeah.
But the amount of guys that I've spoken to and interviewed on here that have come through a Tony and Guy training program. And that's startling. And I know, you know, hey, listen, you know, Tony and Guy has a Marmite effect. Some people love them, some people hate them. And there's that kind of lack of understanding.
Yeah.
But, you know, consistently, you know, you talk about cost, you know, that guy must have several mantelpieces in his house.
He's got a room just for the awards,
you
hasn't
know,
he?
And so, you know, they're doing something right. Yeah. And for the amount of barbers I've had on here that are running great barbering companies, they're like, oh, I trained up as barber. I started doing more men's. I did Tony and Guy, and then I went into barbering.
Yeah.
What is the Tony and Guy barber? You know, I know I'm not going to be out of nutshell why does it work? Why is it so, since like the 90s?
Yeah, you used a word that I'm just going to pluck out of everything you've just said, consistency.
Mm.
You know, being true to what you believe in and being true to your craft and understanding the nuance and not just being a flash in the pan and saying, okay, we're going to change and do this just to be in with the cool kids, and it's not beneficial for the long term.
Yeah.
I think coming from the legacy that Tony and the Muscolo family created, and now Sasha's flying the flag like really, really well. It's allowed us to, if I just touch on the barbering aspect of what we do as a company, the names that end us, like I said, working back from now, and it's me. I remember Sam as a 17-year-old boy when he first came to me and was working together, and I was like, come on, Sam, you got this. You're going to hit the top. He's now Men's Hairdresser of the Year. You work back, you've had the Luke Harris's, the Charlie Cullens, the Kevin Lutchmans, the Jody Taylors, and so much more that I can't even name off the top of my head. The David Sierros. It's wild. And that comes from the consistency of the training and having strong foundations and dedications to what you do. And I always say, and we were waxing lyrical on stage just now, myself and Sam, as we came off, you know, the raptures, the good the rapport, everyone wants to have a picture, everyone wants to take a picture of the work, have a picture of you. But it comes down from the fundamentals, understanding it. Mm. And it's not just barbering, it's not just hairdressing, it's blurring the two lines, like you said. It's the grooming aspects of it. It's understanding the nuance of where something sits, the curvature of the head, the mastoid bone, the occipital bone, you know, how is the weight distribution? It's not just a flash in the pan. How's it going to grow out in 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks? Yeah. The right products that will add longevity to the client's wearability factor. You know, there's so much that goes into play, but when it comes down to the education, and this is what I love, they don't leave any stones unturned. Mm. You really do understand all of the bases, and then you can progress on. And it's not just being an expert in one discipline, it's being a bloody good expert in all disciplines, and then you progress in what you enjoy.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I trained as a hairdresser. I did a full apprenticeship. Yeah. And, you know, the standard rule was you learn everything.
Yeah.
When you've learned it brilliantly, you can stop doing it.
It's true.
And we still, we have apprentices and we still train to that. It's like, you're trying to convince my young apprentices and even existing staff that we do need to learn perming because it may come back at some point.
It's
a discipline and it's got to be in there.
Yeah.
So with Tony and Guy, is the men's now separated to the women's? If you join Tony and Guy for just men's, or do you still do everything?
Not at the moment. We still do everything, but then you can let's say siphon yourself off and become a men's expert, because I think fundamentally part and parcel of the men's element that we do, you have to understand the layering aspects, whether that's short layering, whether that's long layering, because we're seeing now, it sounds like lockdown was so long ago, but so many people have grown out their hair 4 years ago and now they've got hair down to there. And we don't want to do a feminine layering pattern, because you wouldn't see Kurt Cobain with a big fancy blow dryer, would you? You know, it's something a little bit softer. Yeah. It's how we dress the hair. And, you know, it's things like that. So I would always say to everyone, no matter what you do, if you want to be a barber, train as a hairdresser first. And, you know, we can touch on so many, and I don't want to name names, but guys, if you do your research, you know, some of the top end barbers, some of the top L male grooming experts, and I'm not talking about myself, I'm talking people that transcend me.
We were just chatting with Sid Sotung, who went through Vida Sassoon's New York.
And like Sid, you know, Josh, Charlie, Kevin, Jody.
Just goes on and on.
It's a list of endless. Yeah. Yeah. And I think really learn your fundamentals. No, there's nothing wrong with
that. That's the only way you get to be an expert.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong, you know, adding more strings to your bows. Mm. If you don't necessarily play that bow and create that genre of music, you know, it's in your back pocket if you need it in the future.
Definitely. And so do you recognise the training system today as it was that you went through, or has there been an evolution or an organic move?
Yeah. There's been a beautiful organic movement that's pushed, because a lot of people are clamouring for certain stuff. Mm. A lot of people are calling for certain stuff. So, if you didn't notice, I am a black man. And we didn't actually do textured hair. We didn't learn it.
God,
it was something that was orally learned, like you had something on screen. But now in Tony and Guy, and that's something that you learn as part of your level 4. You learn how to do textured hair, and you come into the academy and you work with textured hair.
Yeah.
Whether that's from a hair type that's a 3A all the way to a 4C, we learn that. We still do dry sets, wet sets, perming.
Mm-hmm.
We still do heated Coffee rollers.
Down.
Yeah,
it's,
and
it's
all
there,
these
things. It?
It's never been taken out of our repertoire when it comes to the education aspects. So for me, we're still learning what we did. You still have the straighteners, you still have the tongs, but then we're learning things such as textured hair, we're learning things such as clipper work.
Yeah.
Because for the longest time, it was like, okay, barbers use clippers,
they
don't know how to layer hair.
That's really
Hairdressers know how to layer hair, but they don't know how to clip a hair. So
because I do speak
lines.
To a lot of educators that are saying, oh, we do a 3-4-5 day course for hairdressers to put clipper for beginners. But you've got to have been a hairdresser, you know what you're doing, but they're just not using clippers enough.
Yeah, yeah.
I speak to barbering educators who are like, oh, yeah, a lot of it is about learning to section, learning layering, and learn.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying I think there's a blur. You know, I've always said that, you know, when you're a good, proper, good end barber and you're doing great work, and we worry about our pricing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
many of the kind of new barber stores that have arrived, we've been nicking your clients, because I think they were the guys that didn't go to kind of old Joe's barber shop.
Yeah,
they used
to
spend 40 quid getting their haircut at Tony and Guy, Rush, Headmasters, because they didn't want to go to where their dads went.
Yeah, it's true.
So you must be seeing less men coming into your shops. Is that right, or is that a guess?
It's 50-50 because, you know, where I am, in the salon. So ironically, I've now gone back to Blue Altar and I work there once a month, which is amazing. I'm loving it behind the chair, because, you know, it's still in Southeast, it's Kenton, and across the bridge you've got Essex. So I feel we still have a different client of gents are coming. You know, we still have the classic barbershop skin fade crop. Of course, they'll go to the barbers and they'll love it because I still go to the barbers and have a skin fade. I'll sit there, I'll play a little PlayStation in the corner. You have a chat.
Yeah.
The nuance and the experience is different. But you have clients that come in and they'll have a nice build-up of weight with the scissors or even a little taper with the fade building up into two. I think the experience is different. And I think the clients that want to experience different stuff will come into there. Do they want a hair wash? Do they want a massage? Do they want a little beer? Do they want to have their appointment booked in? Because I understand, you know, just going into a barbershop off the whim, you know, going in, not being afraid to sit in a barbershop for 40 minutes, an hour, waiting for your turn in the chair, an experience having a chat. Not everyone but always wants that.
More and more barbers I speak to, though, you know, are having basins installed, are offering
booking
hair washes.
Systems. And like you said,
systems,
the lines are blurring.
The cold beer in the fridge. I've been into a lot of barbers just to say hello.
Yeah.
And the amount of them that have got right next to their reception, little glass-doored fridge stacked
and
with beer.
This is it.
So there is that kind of change.
I'm seeing
though.
A few barbers, sorry, not barbers, hairdressers. Like we've got one in Shoreditch where you go downstairs, you've got a whole barbering area, you know, lovely little Belmont chair down in there. You do your wet shaves, you do your cutthroats. Yeah. So I think each area is taking in inspiration from each one.
Yeah. No, it has been amazing. I'm like I say, it's amazing how much Tony and Guy... Yeah, when I was
have
coming
impacted
up,
people.
Yeah, there was always kind of Sassoon's Tony and Guy, that which rivalry. Was better, and so I've kind of always kind of wandered through, you know, a 30-odd year career of, you know, I'm in one camp, I'm in the other, and I've always found it really boring. I own two hairdressing salons, and we've got two barber shops, so I've definitely got one foot in each camp. We've got this podcast, and chatting to the amount of people I do, there's no difference. It really is that, and the more the lines blur, the better it's going to be.
I think,
but we haven't cracked this training. We haven't cracked this apprenticeship.
Yeah, that's true.
You got Tony and Guy, whether you like him or not. There's 30, 40 years worth of integrity in there.
And discipline.
I know Anthony Muscola from TG, you know, very well. And
the Don himself.
And you know, when you listen to him talking about cutting hair in Sloane Square. Yeah. You know, and Alex and Alex Baron Ho getting his hair cut. Those two start talking about Sloane Square, and you can see the joy of being in the store.
Memories.
And you know,
this
and it's a lovely, lovely thing.
I think I would say on that when it comes to apprenticeships, I think you have to move with the times, and I think a lot of people have to break the mold because I know for the longest time people were treated appallingly when it came to apprenticeships. I remember, not necessarily myself, but you know, some people had to go out and collect someone's dry cleaning, you know, get someone's lunch. Apprenticeship's more than just making teas and sweeping and stuff. And I think at Tony and Guy, that's what we really embody. You're not there to make the teas. Of course, it's an addition because that allows you to interact with the clients and get to know them on more of a personal level and stuff and be part of it. You're not there to pass falls. When you're passing falls, you're watching, you're learning. When you're with the clipper attachments, but you're there to assist, and we're there to assist you in the development of your career.
And that's it. It's definitely, the left hand washes the right.
And I think that's why Tony and Guy has done so well with the with their assistant training program and the MVQ levels, because I think they've done it right. Of course, we've made some errors, but we've learned from them. Yeah. But I think consistently, there's that word, we've done it right for such a long period of time.
Definitely. And so just before we go, I mean, one of the things that I've spoken to Luke several times about is that we haven't ever had a chance to get, a black-haired barber or a textured barber in to talk about the kind of heritage and the history.
Yeah,
because, black barbering's properly got a story. You know what I mean?
It has.
And, and you see the amount of, walking around here today, the amount of linings and lineups and shapes being cut in.
Mental.
Yeah,
mental.
that was being done 70s, 70s onwards in black 100%. Barbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas our barbers were knocking a number two short back and side.
Everyone
leaves looking like Norman Wisdom on a bad afternoon. You know, that culture's always been there. And it's, I'm really intrigued as to how it's only just started swapping over.
Do you know? I think it swapped over a long time ago, but I think it's become a lot more notable.
Yeah.
How the cultures have infused because I think you can have white barbers that have grown up in particular cultures, And they've taken aspects of that, or they just understand the nuance of, let's say, a black barber. Like I can talk about, you know, the likes of Reese and Alan Beak. They're boys. They're my boys. And excellent. I absolutely love them. And they understand the culture, understand the nuances. You know, we've spoken about Josh and the Men's Spire boys. They're really doing something that's great.
Mm.
And they understand the barbering cultures and what people want in aesthetics, but they've brought that forward with the modern day aspects of, you know, the appointment systems, the this and the that.
Yeah.
But we've still got plenty of barbers out there, black barbers, that are absolutely killing it.
Mm.
And there's so many. I can, you know, Chris Foster, that last year beat me to the Most Wanted Hair Awards. We've got my boy Tarek. You know, you've got slider cuts, you've got HD cuts. You've got loads of people. You've got the boys over there at A-Star Barbers that still have that barbershop mentality.
Mm.
It's cool, it's fun, it's useful.
But that was the big thing. It is fun. You know, now I talk to most barbershops and it's like, oh, the buzz, the banter in the shop.
Yeah.
Whereas
it is what you make it.
My first store I opened up was in Lavender Hill.
Yeah.
And I would walk past, there's a little barber's there that'd been there forever, huge heritage, place called The Arches.
Yeah.
And it was packed by like 8:30 on a Saturday morning. It was just absolutely rammed. And then I'd go home at kind of 6-ish.
Yeah.
Still rammed.
Yeah.
It just looked like a party going on.
Yeah.
And everyone was living in there. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the kind of the bit of the culture that also seems to have come over. The amount of barbers, I want my store to be like a club.
You want it to be fun.
A fun experience for men. Whereas me going to the barbers when I was a little nipper, you'd be marched in. It was exactly like the dentist surgery. You'd
this
sit quietly and then you'd get your hair buzzed.
It's like historically, it set your weekend off.
Mm.
You know, it's like whether it was a Thursday night or whether it was some point on a Friday, it's like I'm gonna go to the barber shop. I'm gonna have a great time.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do what I'm doing best. And when I leave, you know, nothing can stop me.
Yeah,
that shape up's on point. That fades on point. It's clean. I've got my outfit. Whether it was, I don't know. If you didn't have any money, it was a Kappa, it was the Elise, or you're upgrading to the Machino, Evisu, whatever it is. You know, you had. It sounds silly, but it can make or break.
Oh,
if you had a terrible fade and a terrible lineup,
oh, man.
You're not going out.
Yeah,
you're
definitely
not getting no girls.
No.
It was a different level altogether.
So do you still go back to your original barber?
Do you know what?
Recently,
underneath here, I've got no hair at the moment. I shaved it off, but I had the longest barber down in Woolwich, Francis Street, for the longest time. And then Lucy Achiro was cutting my hair and toning guy. My main man, Kevin Lutchman, cutting my hair for the longest time. But I don't know if you remember, I had dreads up until last year. And then I had let's say a midlife crisis. I went to a little fade. Then I did the waves, trying to look like a little sweet boy.
Do you know what?
I'd be lying if I said, I think the ladies loved it more than I did. But I think now I get an extra, you know, 15, 20 minutes in bed. I'd have to worry about doing my barnet. So
your Terrence Trent Derby days are behind
you. I love it. What a boy he was, eh? Millie Vanilli was more like it.
love it.
It's been a great one, yeah.
Fantastic.
It's
been a great one.
Yeah.
So, here for tomorrow?
Yeah, so I'm going to pop in tomorrow, go have a little scope out. And daily, I'm going to do a little bit of shopping. That's something I haven't been able to
do.
And obviously, we've got the awards tonight. So I'm going to go home, back to the hotel, put my glad rags on. And I look forward to seeing who the winners. And I can't even say losers, because everyone's a winner to even get to this point.
That's for the point, yeah.
Fabulous to be in that company. So,
yeah. Are you up for anything?
No, I'm not. But I judge the awards. So for me,
how was that?
Intense.
Yeah.
Like, it was tough. Obviously, the various categories and everyone's interpretation of particular barbering skills, like mental. And like we're saying, there's when you're showcasing different stuff, it's like, okay, barbering is still a taper with elaborate long length from top.
Yeah.
We've even seen people colour now.
Yeah.
Like perm. I saw loads of perms to change the textures.
But that's what we're saying. Perm is back. It's like 14-year-old boys are having it.
Yeah, they're having it with a little taper and a little fade.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You have to understand all aspects of the craft. Mm. You can't, unfortunately, pick and choose.
Be ready for the next trend.
You have to be ready.
Right?
Yeah.
Dex, thanks, man.
Absolute pleasure, brother.
Really lovely to meet you properly. Enjoy it. And I will see you later on tonight for a glass of something somewhere.
And we'll have a little boogie.
But thanks for your time, man.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to The Noble Barber. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks very much. Hi there. If you've got a story or know someone with a story or have a topic that you think we should cover that we haven't yet, please get in touch. We'd love to speak to you.